Welcome to another episode of Pat the Fat Man, where we like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man.
And today, time to come on back to sports ball!
Sports ball! Ruin a perfectly good game of sports ball! Man in the Fox, shoot them down!
Just one gun.
So where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the nonsense stuff, or do we want to start with the important stuff?
Let's start with the nonsense.
Okay.
And by that, I'm sure you mean our NFL teams.
Sure, we can do that. Yes, they're technically NFL teams.
Yes. We're the Cleveland Browns.
We punt. Yes, we know. If you don't know that, there's a social guy doing social media stuff on the Browns, and you know, the one thing that he says when he's the Browns every time is, "We're the Cleveland Browns. Yes, we know." And that they punt a lot, because they do, because they have no effing offense. They are, what, 2-6, I think, right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, we beat Green Bay, and we beat the Jets. Everyone's beating the Jets. And in hindsight, the Green Bay win looks pretty good, but compared to the sadness of the other six games, which were absolutely just... There's no other way to put it. It's just bad. It's just bad football.
Yeah.
We got rid of Joe Flacco after, I don't know, what, week 3 or 4. And what did we do? We traded him directly to the Cincinnati Bengals. Because that's the kind of smart people we have running this effing organization, is we're going to trade him for practically nothing, by the way. I think it was like maybe a 6th round pick or something. And we traded him to the Bengals. And this new kid, Dylan Gabriel, that we got, he went to Oregon. We got him in like the 3rd round of the draft. We put him in front of Shedeur Sanders, which a lot of people are like, why aren't you playing Shedeur Sanders? Because he looks pretty good and he's got a pretty good pedigree. But you drafted him in the 5th round because, oh no, he's got a personality. Yeah, you know what? So did Baker Mayfield, and look what you did there. So why are we making the same mistakes here, guys?
Yeah.
I digest.
Well, you sent Flacco to the Bengals, and he's actually doing not too bad for them. I mean, they're not good either this year, but
right, for a guy that's 41 years old, and you know, beat the hell.
I mean, he makes me feel like I could play football. I can't, but instills that belief in my 42-year-old self.
Freaking old man Rogers, though, kicking ass over in Pittsburgh. That son of a...
Yeah.
I swear to God, we are going to see that there's some sort of giant conspiracy with the bleeping Pittsburgh Steelers and their coach Tomlin, that freaking mafioso whatever. Meanwhile, down in Tampa, Baker Mayfield's just showing up and showing out.
Yeah,
it's gonna take the freaking Tampa Bay Bucks to the Super Bowl.
Yep, Bucks to the Super Bowl again in the last 5 years, right? Because Brady did it, what, 4 years ago, 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
his first season out of 2 that he was with Tampa.
Yeah, so this is Mayfield's 2nd season with Tampa. So that'd been 4 years ago.
And he almost took him to the Super Bowl last year.
Yep.
Now that I got my blood angered up, you can go ahead and talk about the Cowboys.
Yeah, they've been awful this year. So we're 3-4-1, our one being against Green Bay that we took to 2 overtimes. Is it just 1 overtime? Either way, if you're tied at the end of the number of overtimes that they let you do, then you're tied. Unless it's like a championship game or the playoffs. We tied Green Bay. We beat the Giants. We beat the Jets. And we beat the Washington football team. We beat a lot of terrible teams, and we've been beaten by the Bears, the Eagles. The Eagles are probably top in the NFC right now. But the Bears, the Panthers, the Cardinals just last night.
And not just the Cardinals, Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah.
Jacoby Brissett, who was the quarterback we brought in to replace Joe Flacco last year, and he's about just as old as Joe Flacco.
Yeah.
And just as good.
Oh, yeah. No, we're terrible. just flat out, you know, our pass rush is pretty good, but that can only really get us two downs out of four. And the other two downs, they just throw the ball and whoever is supposed to catch it, catches it and gets a first down. And that's how our defense works. We're okay against the run. We have pretty good pass rushing. So if the quarterback holds on to it for more than 4 seconds, he's going to get sacked. But otherwise, our secondary and our man-to-man coverage is about as bad as you can get. So throwing the ball is a widely used option by anybody who plays against the Cowboys. Offense is start and stop like it's always been. It's always been centered around certain key players working the way they can. So Prescott, Pickens, who's new this year, Smith, who's our running back, he's new this year, Williams, and CeeDee Lamb. And if two out of the four of those are not having a good night, we're going to lose. Because our defense is no good and our offense depends on those four people being on their game. That's just what we are. We can put together an offensive drive. We can even look good for multiple offensive drives in a game, but we can't look good for all of them. And if any of those players are not having a good night or have been shut down by the opposing defense, like our run game was last night, then we just don't do so well. And so that's been the Cowboys. Very disappointing. We made some trades today. We got another linebacker, you know, hopefully to make our defense a little better. We traded a first round pick for some guy I'd never even heard of. The moves Jerry's making, they're not going to get us to the Super Bowl. I don't even know if they'll get us a winning season. I'm kind of flabbergasted we gave up a first round pick for anybody.
Isn't that the more incredible thing is that these owners and like managers have been doing? Like, because I've got the same thing going on with Cleveland, is that the moves that they're making make you say that they don't want to win this year. And you don't know what year they want to win because this has been going on for so long. You're like, it's what year, you know, were you trying to? Because they all seem like the same moves and you're not winning. You just wonder, what are they waiting around for?
And it's especially problematic for us. Jerry Jones could literally get killed by a stiff breeze. I mean, the man's like 4,900 years old at this point.
like the only thing keeping him alive right now is watching football.
Yeah, he's the embodiment of Montgomery Burns. If you took Montgomery Burns and made him a football franchise owner instead of a power plant owner, you would get Jerry Jones. Like, there's no other way to put it.
Excellent. I call it the Spruce Moose. Get in. Good answer. I said get in. I can see Jerry Jones doing that.
Yeah. I can see him holding himself up in a theater, eating bags of chips and peeing into jars.
Makes you wonder if he's got an effeminate gay handyman nearby.
Hey, no guarantees on whether Smithers is actually gay or not. Bruce is staring at me really hard in the camera, and now so hard that I lost you. The picture put you into the background.
Yep.
I assume they have told the audience that Smithers is gay at this point, but I really don't know, because it was like an open thing that they never actually said out loud, and it was sort of the running gag in the show.
Yeah, except when he went on vacation that one time, it was definitely to a gay resort.
Oh yeah,
it was a tropical gay resort.
And that was the thing, it's always this stuff that they never actually fully say it out loud. Even the episode where they have like the gay guy, and that's like the point of the show, because he runs the toy store in the mall. Like, it turns out that he's hanging out with Homer, and Smithers encounters them, and he's like, oh, so this is your sick mother, huh? So it's like, it's all that stuff going on, but they never actually say he is. But I wonder, you know, 30 seasons now, 30 plus, if they actually have said or not. I don't know. I'm not going to watch all that Simpsons to find out either. That's one of those after I'm dead things. If it matters, I'll watch it. I can't see it mattering, but heck, I don't know. So yeah, that's the silliness in the NFL. There's several good teams out there. If you're rooting for those, you know, good for you. But
yeah, good for you.
Our teams they're not going to the Super Bowl. Be surprised if they make the playoffs.
Be surprised if we get a winning record, or even close to a winning record. I mean, an 8-9 record would be just freaking awesome at this point.
Yeah, if we could win like 4 more games, heck yeah. 7 games, sure, whatever. Or just tank the season and get as many as good a picks as we can, but we gave up our first round pick. So I don't, who even cares at this point? It was defensive tackle Quinnen Williams, I think, from Green Bay or the Jets. I can't tell. Either way, it doesn't matter.
You guys made a trade today for the trade deadline. Was that of anything of noteworth?
That's what I just said. That was the trade.
Sorry.
Yeah, that was the trade.
It was NFL, so I was kind of blocked out because, I mean, it's just so depressing.
Yeah, I know, right? It just, these players. I don't know. I don't get it. I mean, I do get it. You know, I honestly don't think it's the players as much as it's the coaching. I think for the defense, it's the coaching. I think there's a lot of people who are quick to blame the players. I was listening to sports radio this morning.
It's just it. Like, what do coaches actually do? Because it doesn't seem like it's the coach. It seems like they're just standing there to be managers, you know?
It's the schemes and the play calling and what they're having them do in practice and all that that kind of coalesces into whether or not they're any good or not.
That was the big news this week for the Browns, was that the head coach, Kevin Stefanski, was going to give up play calling duties to the OC. I'm like, you've done that before too, okay?
Yeah.
This isn't new. This isn't a new strategy. Again, we're going through the same thing, you know, again, the definition of insanity, you know, and it's just like, what the,
you know, at the end of the day, as a Cowboys fan, I know who's making the play calls, and that's Jerry Jones. Doesn't even matter when it comes down to the line and everything's on the line and we have to make this play. I know who's making that call, and it's always the wrong
one. Always the wrong one.
Has been for ever since he's owned the franchise. Got us to one Super Bowl on the back of the former owner and the former coaching staff and general manager, and then fired them all. And then we haven't been worth anything since.
Oh, I'm sorry. We haven't played the Jets. We played the Jets this weekend. It was the Dolphins. That's right. We beat the Dolphins handedly, by the way, which everyone thought that that would mean that the Dolphins head coach would lose his job for losing to the Browns. But he's hung in there.
Yeah. Unlike in the college world, where it's been a head coaching sell-off this last 2 weeks.
Suckers.
Yeah. All right, where do we want to go now? Now that we've covered the clowns in the NFL.
Well, let's save college, because that's probably the best one to talk about. Let's briefly talk about baseball in the World Series. Of our two teams, my team made to the playoffs. We got into the first round. Really, it was just fate is the only way you could explain it, because we were back in August, like 15 games behind Detroit for the AL Central.
Basically miraculous.
Yes. We won the division by one game on the last day. So then we ended up facing Detroit in the wild card series, and that went to three games. We lost that one in three. Yada, yada, yada. World Series came down to Toronto and L.A. The funny part about that is Toronto actually has four former Cleveland baseball team Guardian players that are on Toronto. They were on Guardians. We traded them for one reason or another, and they were all playing for Toronto in the World Series. So it's the Dolans and Chris Antonetti, you know, the guys who run the front office. Way to go, guys, because, you know.
Way to trade away a World Series team.
But L.A. was not dominant in this World Series.
No.
I mean, again, it went to seven games, and the last game went to 11 innings. Now, that being said, Toronto dropped the ball in Game 7. They had a lead throughout almost the entire game, and they coughed it up in the ninth. And it went to extras, and obviously the Dodgers won. In fact, the Blue Jays had home field advantage as far as the series was concerned. So this was played in Toronto.
Yep.
Ohtani got MVP this year because, of course, he did.
Of course he did.
It's going to be fun to see, because I think in next year is when they're doing a collective bargaining agreement again. And the subject of salary caps are coming in. So we'll see how Major League Baseball deals with that, because I mean, that's the only reason to pump up Ohtani, is because he's got like the biggest contract out there right now.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It's not that he's not deserving of it. He is a generational phenom in baseball, but I don't remember hearing his name a lot, though, during the World Series.
He's sort of like Tiger Woods, right? If Tiger Woods is on the golf course, then the sports announcers are talking about Tiger Woods.
Right.
We're watching him walk down the fairway. Instead of watching other guys hit balls, right, on the other holes, we're watching Tiger Woods get a drink of water. water, and we're watching him go to the bathroom. We're watching him. We're just always watching Tiger. And it's the same thing. Anytime you have somebody who has either a big media presence or is seen as a generational phenomenon, then they get all the attention. And that's Shohei Ohtani, like just flat out. So in the World Series twice in a row, Dodgers managed to do two World Series in a row. Went to Game 7. Game 7 went to the 11th inning.
Yep.
I was heartbroken the way that ended.
Yep.
Really, for Toronto. Not that I like Toronto in particular, because they knocked us out of a World Series. You know, back in the day, I think the ALCS, they knocked us out of that. 2016, if I remember correctly. So no real love for them, but I hate the Dodgers.
They're the new Yankees.
Right. They're the Yankees of the National League, basically. Wanted them to lose. They didn't. They won. The second longest game in World Series history went to 18 innings and 6 hours and 30 minutes, something like that. Some ridiculous number. I want to say that was game 4 or 5. But yeah, a heck of a series. So if you were either a Dodgers or a Toronto fan, or really just a baseball fan in general, it was probably a really good series to watch.
It probably was. Yes, I agree.
I am not enough of a baseball fan, because the truth is most of those games were played during other sports that I like better. Flat out.
I'm just a homer, so if it's not my team, then I was rooting for Toronto because, again, I believe that those former Cleveland Guardian players, you know, I'd love to see them win a World Series because, I mean, they all deserve it.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all good players. That's why I was rooting for Toronto, but I wasn't that vested in it. Yeah, because I really didn't care about either team.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dodgers had won 2 World Series in the last 5 years at that point. This is number 3. It's nothing special.
Yeah.
If Ohtani had hit a home run in every single one of those games, that would have made me watch probably game 7 if he was racking up the home runs and whatnot, but just wasn't that interesting.
Yeah. I mean, he got hit on wasn't a fielder's choice. It was just a grounder effectively to the infield in the 10th inning. So he was not instrumental in closing that game out for the Dodgers. It was the guy after him who hit the home run, and then Toronto got the rest of the outs. God, it was so sad because Toronto had one out, had guys on first and third, and guy hits it straight down the middle, caught by the second base. He goes tag second base and throws the runner out at first.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And gets it's the two outs.
That's right.
And you're just like,
yep.
Anything else? If it had gone to the outfield, even if it had been a pop fly, caught.
But runner on second would have just stayed and tagged up and would have been safe. And
no, the runner on third would have tagged and gone to home, right, and tied it.
Yep.
If the guy had hit a home run, that'd be the end of the game. It would have been a walk-off. If he got a single, anything would have been better than the one thing he did. So that was heartbreaking. I'm a much bigger baseball fan than I was 4 years ago, but I'm just not a big enough fan to watch other people's teams play baseball.
Yep. The way my season ended, it's funny because it was the same way last year too. I didn't feel angry. I didn't feel sad because we had lost. I just felt sad that it was over. That's how I feel about it. It's like, I'd like to see my team keep going. But once they were out of it, yeah, I didn't really have any interest. I was happy to see the Yankees lose in the second round.
I was ticked off. You know, my team was going into the last 10 games looking like they had an above average shot at making the playoffs, and they just blew it completely. They lost every game on the road to Houston, which was a double whammy, right? Because they're in the same division. And then they proceeded to lose. And I went to the last game where they had any chance, where they had a 6% chance, right? They basically had to win out and some other people had to lose. And I went to the last game against the Marlins.
Got the Marlins.
It was the first game in that series or the second game in that series. 6% chance. We had to sweep the Marlins, basically. And we lose in the 13th inning.
For any team to be a spoiler and it be the Marlins, I mean, damn.
I know, right? I was just angry. And then, of course, you know, the Rough Riders didn't make the playoffs for the minor league either. So it wasn't as big of a deal. They made it last year. But baseball was just over. And it's like, well, that was lame. I had even bought tickets. I'd gotten the tickets for the
wild card series.
Actually, no, I didn't buy it for the wild card series because at that point I knew there was no chance we were going to play it at home. So why even bother? I bought it for the divisional just on the off chance we made it there and got my refund because we didn't, those games didn't play. So And then, even though I was in on like the second round of people to buy tickets for the Banana Bowl game that's going to be happening at Globe Life Field, which is where the Rangers play, I wasn't early enough. I like 2 minutes after the gates open, the stadium's completely sold out on all three games. So it's not even the stadium. It's literally just the first deck.
Really?
Yeah. Not even the outfield.
That's weird because, I mean, the Savannah Bananas are incredibly popular. They sell out like, you know, football stadiums. So I don't know why you wouldn't have the whole place, you know.
And it may have just been the initial, before the general public offering was just those sections. But either way, the rest of it's done by lottery system. So there is no guarantee.
Well, speaking of a lottery system, we'll talk about something that, well, it's not until next year, but it was something of a controversy is, and we talked about it with another friend of ours when you were last here, the World Cup, talking about a lottery system.
Right, right.
Cheapest tickets were like $60, and it was like a little small sliver in one stadium, maybe 100 seats, if that, that were $60, and the rest were like, you know, 100, 200, you know, something like that, something ridiculous. And it's a lottery system that, from what I understand, hardly anybody got in.
Huh.
I don't know. FIFA apparently doesn't care how they sell tickets because they know they'll sell them no matter what. I think they had this issue last time when they were doing it in Saudi Arabia, didn't they? Weren't there all sorts of issues?
There were a ton of issues.
Yeah, with people trying to get tickets and things like that.
Yeah.
FIFA as an organization.
Is it FIFA?
FIFA. FIFA.
I've always called it FIFA.
FIFA.
Yeah.
They probably make more money than even the NFL owners do.
I have to assume the people on that board, our houses are made of gold.
Like literally.
Yeah.
It's probably not even a joke. I mean, it is a joke because, you know, dear God, if you got that kind of money.
Yeah. If you really want to feel like what the hell is even going on anymore, check out Zillow Gone Wild and see the kind of quote unquote single family homes that the rich have. It's ridiculous.
Real quick, because then I think the college football is the big one we want to talk about. So
no, we all know I'm going to talk about it for like 45 minutes. So he just doesn't shut up.
With the end of baseball came the start of hockey. Jackets are doing pretty good. Actually tied for like third. They are 7-5. And they look like a good team. Look like they'll probably make the playoffs, but it's way too early to tell. 12 games in out of an 82 game season. The Dallas Stars are similarly actually about the same. They're 6-3-3, 15 points.
Yeah.
So 1 point better than the Jackets.
We look pretty good. We're fun to watch. Fun enough that I'll actually watch a non-playoff game, which I'm not there with the Mavericks. I'm just not going to. We traded Doncic to the Lakers, so I'm just angry. And I don't think we'll make the playoffs. So I don't imagine I'm going to watch the Mavericks again for 3 or 4 more years. It's because we've gutted our team. But hockey's at least enjoyable enough to watch a period or two outside of the playoffs.
I always have fun watching hockey. But then again, the Jackets do a good job of trying to keep fans engaged by like offering things like when they score goals or win games and things like that. So, oh, and MLS soccer's in the playoffs right now. Ironically, so the Crew didn't win the conference. And actually, they barely made the playoffs. But so their wild card round is against their rival, Cincinnati. So this has been the Hell is Real series that's tied at one game apiece. They play Saturday for the winner take all in Cincinnati.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. So we'll see how that goes.
It kind of looks like FC Dallas actually made the playoffs.
Oh, did they?
They lost to Vancouver. That might have been it.
Well, if it's in the first round, they should have gone 3 games. So unless they lost 2 in a row.
They lost 2 in a row. Oh, wait, no, they won one and lost one and then tied. But I think Vancouver had 4 goals in the series. We had 2 goals in the series. So, but hey, actually made the playoffs. Good for them.
All right, let's get to the fun one. Going to college football.
College football. So I don't think we've covered the season at all yet, which is surprising for us.
Especially with how good the season is.
Yeah. For those of you who don't remember or are tuning in just now for our sports ball stuff, our college football team is Texas A&M University.
It's the one team you and I are united on so far.
Yeah. Part of the SEC or Southeast Conference, 16 teams in the SEC, no longer East-West divisions. It's just free-for-all. Everybody kind of makes their own schedule year to year. It actually changed things pretty dramatically for us. because we removed Ole Miss and Alabama from our schedule, added Texas, kind of another round robin team. But we almost always play South Carolina, Auburn,
and either Alabama, LSU, or Texas now.
Arkansas. So we haven't played Alabama the last 2 years. I don't think we'll play them again in the regular season for a while now. But either way, our schedule got a lot easier because Alabama and Ole Miss, typically in any given season, at least those two teams were going to be the ones we lost to, plus another two others, because we are Texas 8-4, right? That's the joke. We're not Texas A&M, we're Texas 8-4, because we lose four games in the regular season, and then we go on to lose our bowl game. And we've done that for a long time. For a very long time, except for that one season where we went 4-8 instead. So, and it's just been this constant hiring a coach. The coach gets up to Slocum levels, who was head coach for like, I don't know, two decades, who got us to 8-4 year after year and after year after year. So we were always competitive in the Big 12, but we were never the conference championship. We always went to a bowl game. And we won or lost about half the time. Beat Texas about, I don't know, half the time. And every head coach since then has kind of done the same thing to us. So whether that was Sumlin or Francione or Sherman and then Jimbo, right? Jimbo had the one season, the COVID season, where we actually, except for Alabama, we ran the table. Should have been in the college football playoff. You know, ended the season ranked number four.
Yes. And that was the year it was a toss-up between us and Ohio State that was going to get in.
No, it was us and Notre Dame.
Us and Notre Dame?
Yeah. Go watch the SEC short on that one. It's probably the best one they ever did. Yeah. Okay. It's amazing. But either way, it was us and Notre Dame because Notre Dame had played in the ACC that year. They had lost to Clemson, but also beat Clemson. And ACC had canceled their conference championship game in order to protect both those teams. And then we had lost to Alabama. And so the question was, who is better? We were better. Notre Dame got absolutely destroyed in the first round of the college football playoffs that year, I think by Alabama. And we ended up winning our bowl game. And we got, I think, North Carolina. We played them. And we won that game. And we got ranked at the end of the season number four. So should have gone to the college football playoff. Didn't go. It was a sad, sad year for us. But then Fisher fell apart after that. You know, we went 8-4, I think, the next year, and then the 4-8 the year after that. And then it was time to boot him. So then we hired Mike Elko. He came in, you know, thinking last year things are changed, things are different. We got a different guy come in real strong. We win 7 games, and then we just collapse like a flan in a cupboard. We go to South Carolina. We lose to South Carolina. Travion Moss goes out on a knee injury, out for the rest of the season. We do not win another SEC game after that point. So we lose to South Carolina, we lose to Auburn, and then we lose to Texas. So start of this season, that was Elko's first season as head coach. Can't hold it against him, right? He's playing with somebody else's recruits. He's got other things going. We lost Moss, where we were very heavily reliant on Moss. None of our other running backs were really up to speed. Daniels was okay. But coming to this season, feels different.
Mm-hmm. We're scrappier. Like if we get down, we're not out. Like, it doesn't spiral for us. We take a second to regroup, and then we find a way to win. And we were both watching the CFP ranking, you know, thing. They were talking about why people were ranked the way they were. And they're like, oh, yeah, but A&M's defense is worse than Indiana's or Ohio State's. I'm like, I don't know if that's true. I can remember a couple of games this year where they really kept A&M in the game all game.
Oh, yeah.
Have they been great? No, but I mean, I still think that they've been pretty darn good.
The truth is, what we've seen is, you know, our first real big game of the season was against Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. We were at Notre Dame.
South Bend, yep.
Notre Dame's coming off a loss against Miami. Mm-hmm. So they have to win, right, in order to get to the college playoffs, although they're going to get there anyways. It's stupidest. Anyways, we'll get into that later. They're the most overranked team in the nation. By far, even more than Texas. But they had to beat us, right? That was the thing. And we were there. Game's pretty wild. Turns into an offensive shootout.
Yep.
Quite literally. Defense is just not able to put real stops up. They have a running back. His last name is Love. And that guy is hard to bring down. He just really is. They got a decent quarterback who can make some good passes. And so they put some points up, but so did we. We basically exchanged blow for blow all the way down. fourth quarter. It's coming up to the end. They score another touchdown. They make it to 40 points. And then their quarterback muffs the set. So their kicker is going to kick the extra point. Quarterback gets the ball, drops it. Kicker can't kick it. He can't make a two-point conversion out of it or a one-point or anything. So they ended up at 40 points. We get the ball back. We've got like 3 minutes. We drive it all the way down, get to the very literally last seconds, and score a touchdown with a pass to a tight end in the end zone. So we're now 40-40, kick the extra point, and we win the game. That kind of showcased what our offense could really put on the line. You go to the next couple games at Kyle Field, and they become defensive games primarily.
For certain, Auburn, because that was probably the closest of the next three games, because that was 16-10. But the rest of them, I mean, well, no, okay, then the next two, Mississippi State and Florida, we just whoop on them. I mean, Mississippi State 31-9, and then Florida 34-17. So,
yeah,
those were a couple of ass whoopings.
The Auburn game was very much neither offense could do much. Mm-hmm. Right? Auburn's offense is absolutely terrible. And ours just wasn't firing at all. But our defense was.
Right.
And we were clobbering them. Mississippi State looked bad until the second half. Florida looked bad until the second half. The scores were very close. Our offense wasn't firing, but our defense was holding their offense. Things didn't really open up for us until our offense started to kick in gear. And really, in a lot of ways, this points to Elko being a really good coach.
Right, because in the middle of the game, he got these guys to, you know, to focus and then assert themselves into winning.
Well, and if you can come out of halftime with a new strategy, right, that wins you the game, then what that means is you can adjust on the fly.
Right.
You can take the feedback, which is something Jimbo couldn't do. If his setup wasn't good for that game, we were hosed. We were just going to go down. So once the other coaches figured him out, we were sunk. Doesn't seem to be the case with Elko. Now, Auburn, Mississippi State, Florida. They're kind of the dregs of the SEC. I just named basically the three worst teams in the SEC. Then we go on the road and play Arkansas. Now I've named the four worst teams in the SEC. Auburn, Mississippi State, Florida, and Arkansas. The Arkansas game is, again, another, you know, offensive powerhouse game.
The Arkansas game is the way the Arkansas game has been for like the last, I don't know, decade?
Longer than that. 15 years, I want to say. It was prior to us coming into the SEC.
Right.
Because that game was originally set up as a, you know, a showcase preseason game that was happening in Dallas at Jerry's World. At the time, Jerry's World was new to show off Jerry's World. You know, and Jerry Jones played at Arkansas. He's always been big on them. And so that was kind of his deal. And then when we became part of the SEC, it became a conference game. They re-signed a 10-year contract. So we played there for, I want to say, 14 years. Last year was the last year we played at Jerry's World, and now we're playing either in Fayetteville for Arkansas or at home at A&M for us. So it's going back and forth now. They had a quarterback we couldn't stop, just flat out. Our guys' defensive line was consistently beating their offensive line into the backfield. The quarterback would scramble and get 20 yards because he is blazingly fast. Our schemes were not set up for that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the fourth quarter when we figured out you have to send a guy from both sides at the same time. And if you do that, you can bring him down. But otherwise, he's just not going to come down. At the same time, the offense is scoring like madmen. We're kind of running the table on the non-existent Arkansas defense. That game ends up being 45-42. And you're right. You look back at the Arkansas games for as long as we've been playing them. In the SEC and even before that, they've always been crazy.
Right.
Always. Always weird, shenanigan, crazy scores.
And so maybe that's why they're not as high on A&M as opposed to Indiana and Ohio State. If you're not taking history into account, that's always a crazy game.
It is. We beat the four bottom feeders in the SEC. Now, these bottom feeders in the SEC, when they play people from the other conferences, they dominate them. Right. So let's just, Mississippi State beat the conference champion from the Big 12 for last year, Arizona State, to start the season. Florida, not so much. Florida lost to FSU, I want to say, but then went on to beat Alabama. No, Texas. They beat Texas.
That's right. In Florida.
In Florida. You know. To be honest, there are no quote-unquote easy games in the SEC. That's just not to be had.
Right, but then there's Notre Dame. That, to me, is what you got to hang your hat on, is go, we beat our SEC teams like we should. Mm-hmm. Including LSU, which we'll get to next. We beat Notre Dame in a high-profile game like it's supposed to be, in a close game like it's supposed to be, and we came out on top against a Northern team.
Yeah.
Which you can tell that the CFP committee, they think that the Northern teams are better for some reason.
Yeah.
Even though that Ohio State, I mean, Indiana's having an off year, but there's got to be a conspiracy with the Big Ten because, I mean, Ohio State always dominates, and then there's Indiana all of a sudden out of nowhere is doing good.
Because, you know, they made it to the college playoffs last year. They didn't deserve to. Their record didn't back them up. This year it does. They flat out beat Oregon to the ground. Mm-hmm. I would like to see Ohio State and Indiana play against each other. I don't know if they do for the rest of their season, but that would be the real test in my mind. Because Ohio State beat Texas right out the gate. Texas played them for their first game of the season, and Ohio State beat them. So Ohio State looks like it's a pretty good team.
You know, Indiana doesn't play Ohio State this year.
Yeah, and I didn't figure they would.
Go fig.
So I think Ohio State's kind of, we'll see how the Michigan game goes for them. I'll be curious to see if Michigan ends up continuing to win that or not. I don't expect Indiana to lose another game this season, to lose a game this season.
No, their last three teams are Penn State, Wisconsin, and Purdue. Their last game, Purdue, and Purdue has not won a conference game this year, and they are sitting at 2-7.
And Penn State, basically UCLA proved that Penn State was trash this year, so they were highly rated.
They're only slightly better than Purdue at 3-5 all around, and no conference wins as well.
Right. So I don't see much slippage in rankings on the Big Ten teams.
No.
In the same way, I don't see much showcasing of them either.
Not unless Michigan somehow pulls off a miracle and beats them again for one another third or fourth year.
Yeah. Us, on the other hand, we're on the backside of our season, right? We go to LSU with two Baton Rouge, two Death Valley at night. So this is the perfect trap game because neither team has ever beaten the other team at home.
Right.
At least not for a long time. You know, we have that crazy 7 overtime game, which I think was the first time we beat LSU at home. And then since then, it's been back and forth. We went in there. We didn't look very good the first half. The defense didn't look great. They looked okay. They were able to stop them sometimes, able not to other times. And our offense made a lot of mistakes and got very unlucky, both at the same time. And when that happens, you just kind of get train wrecked. But we gave the ball. I want to say he threw two or three interceptions in the first half, or we had two or three turnovers. There were things we didn't need to have happen, stuff where we drove the entire field and then threw an interception in the end zone. It looked like LSU's defense was kind of on fire. We looked not great. We end, you know, the first half like down by 1 point. I think it's 15-14, something like that.
End of the first half, it was 18-14.
Because they got a safety on us, right? They blocked one of our punts, and it went back to the end of the end zone, and that's a safety.
Or they were up. Sorry, I was reading that wrong. Yeah, they were up 18-14.
Yeah, they were up 18-14. So we weren't looking very good. It wasn't looking very good for us. And we came out in the second half and just punched them in the face.
Ran right over them.
Yeah. Our offense started firing on all cylinders. Our defense kept Nussmeier on the ground most of the game that he was out there. They were dropping him like a sack of potatoes. They did manage to score again. They got up to 25 points, but we beat them 49-25.
Yep.
Very handily. This was a notion that our team might actually be good, not just okay for an SEC team, right? So still better than the vast majority of teams out there, but okay for an SEC team. But we might actually be good. Now, our second big test comes this coming weekend, and that's Missouri, right? Because this is another game we're playing away at Missouri. And quite literally, Notre Dame was the first win against a top-ranked opponent away that we'd had, I think a ranked opponent on an away game that we had in like, I don't know, 50 years. Some ridiculous stat. We hadn't beat a ranked away team in forever, effectively. Possibly 100 years. I don't know. It'd been a long, long time. Possibly since our Big 12 days. So going in, beating Notre Dame at home, and then beating LSU at home, both those were ranked, or are ranked still. Now we're going up against Missouri. Missouri's ranked, right? It's at Missouri. Now Missouri's taken a lot of hits. Like, they're not as good of a team. They've taken two losses. One of them against Vanderbilt, who's having a phenomenal year. and so that's a big test. Then we'll play South Carolina at home. I don't think that's going to be a big test. you know, we have a pretty good shot at beating them. I'll still be worried during the game.
It got easier last week after they fired their offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So anytime you have a big staff change in the middle of the season, it usually doesn't bode well for you.
Yeah. And then we play Samford, who's just, you know, it's a FBS one team that we're just, you know, paying a bunch of money to beat up like you do. I'm going to that game because those are fun games. Because usually you get to see the second, third string play. You get 12 man kickoffs. You get all kinds of crazy stuff.
There's no fighting for the concessions.
Exactly. No, I say that. I went to this game last year and it wasn't Samford. It was somebody else, but it was similar, you know, like Prairie View A&M or something like that. There was 108,000 people there. The stadium only holds like 115. I was like, wow, there are still a lot of people here.
You want to show up when there's a good time. I mean, you know.
It's true. Then we finish playing against Texas at Texas. So the front half of our schedule is loaded down with the dregs of the SEC, and we're playing all of them at home. The last half of the SEC schedule is playing with the mid-tier, playing against the mid-tier SEC teams all away. And that's trap, right? That's just screams trap. And given our propensity to blow it in the second half of our season, time and time and time and time immemorial, I just think we're going to do it again.
So we're going to have to change your name to Debbie because you're being a Debbie Downer here, Pat.
Yeah, I just can't.
Come on.
It's
8-0, boy. 8-0.
I know we're 8-0.
We got this. Mizzou is number 22 in the country so far. 22.
I know it's been since like 1994 since we started 8-0. I don't care. I still feel like we could totally just blow it. Like it just, at any given moment, I don't want to hope, Bruce, because I don't want to be let down. Like it's just, I feel it in my bones as an Aggie.
See, this is it. This is just it. You said it to me the other day that I don't know because I'm not invested in it like you are. I haven't been through it like you have. Oh, man, I can't believe you said that to me. Being a Cleveland sports fan, you don't think I understand. And that I haven't earned my stripes is what you said.
Oh no, you know why? Because the Browns have never been good enough to disappoint you the way A&M has.
They went to the playoffs a couple of years ago.
They too, well, they did.
Like four. Okay, they were good then.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right.
I actually was at a Game 7 World Series where I saw them winning. They were winning until the ninth inning, and then they blew it.
And imagine that 10 years in a row. Imagine that your entire life. Imagine living that experience from the time you started watching football until today, that you've consistently year over year watched your team get really good, get hyped up even in the press, and then blow it out of the water or not. No, that's the, and just then just get
the life of a Cleveland fan in general, just every year.
Yeah, so you guys suck out of the gate. Like it's a different experience when you constantly think this year.
Now you're just sounding like ESPN when they talk about A&M, all right?
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's worse to be a South Carolina fan because you have no basis for your belief that you're going to go all the way this year. Absolutely none. But they all believe it. All of them. Every year. Us, on the other hand, we don't believe it. And then mid-year, we're like, hey, maybe we're actually pretty good this year. We have a chance. And then it's soul-sucking. So it's hard. I want us to win.
Honestly, I think the only challenging game coming up outside of Mizzou is going to be Texas, I think. And I really don't think that Mizzou is going to be that tough. I just think that whenever you're playing away from home. But we've won big games on the road this year. So, I mean,
statistically speaking, we should beat Missouri. We should beat Texas. We should win out. You know, and then we're going to go play Alabama in the SEC championship. Probably. It might be Georgia. Probably going to be Alabama. Unless some really strange thing happens and then we're it's Ole Miss.
Right.
And that game, I don't know how that game will go. What I do know is if the college football playoff has any integrity at all, college football playoff council, whatever the group is,
the committee,
they'll still put both teams into the playoffs.
That was weird today that they put that on TV. Cause I mean, I know we complain about like not knowing what those guys do, but trying to have them on TV explain it. And we're still 4 weeks out from the end of the regular season.
Yeah.
I'm like, your predictions mean absolutely nothing right now and do nothing but try to set up teams to fail.
Yeah.
That's all you're doing is just provoking the underdogs to come up and beat the upper guys. So that way, you know, nobody's deserving of being in the playoffs. It's just whoever lost the least.
That was last year in the SEC, right? That's why only three SEC teams made it in. And in my opinion, only two of those were good. You know, I don't think Tennessee really deserved to go, to be honest. And they played Ohio State, so they got blown out of the water right away. Mm-hmm. It's been an interesting year in the SEC. Vandy has had just a phenomenal season. They've only had two losses, one against Alabama and Texas. They couldn't put Texas away.
Right.
They lost to Alabama, they lost to Texas, which was sad. They beat Missouri, right? College game day was at the Missouri-Vanderbilt game. So it was the biggest game in the country that day. And the SEC shorts guy who wears the Vandy pimp slash king uniform showed up on game day. And everybody in Vanderbilt was wearing that stuff. SEC shorts really has become a phenomenon in college sports at this point. I would hazard a guess that even non-SEC fans are watching SEC shorts as religiously as we do.
Yeah, Big Ten guys going, hey, how can we make a Big Ten short?
Right, exactly. You know, I did see one guy doing a Big 12 round table, similar to the SEC roll call, which is another set of shorts. What I really like about all, because there's four guys, four bigger guys who do SEC and general football parody stuff on a weekly basis. And they'll all get together occasionally and do collaborations with each other. and that's always fun to see. It's been a good year for Vanderbilt. It's been a relatively not so great year for Texas. They lost against Ohio State, and then they lost to Florida. They have squeaked out a win against Kentucky only because Kentucky's head coach is a moron. Tried to run the ball up the middle on the one-yard line twice in a row in overtime. All they had to do was score points, and they would have won that. You know, got 0 points. Texas went down, won by a field goal. So they beat Kentucky, who is possibly the worst team in the SEC, by 3 points. And then they just squeaked out a win to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, they looked like they were down for the count, like 34 to 10 in the fourth quarter. And in the fourth quarter alone, Vanderbilt scored 21 points. So they almost came back and won that game. It was literally the butterfingers of the guy who was grabbing for the onside kick, because Vanderbilt kicked an onside kick and the Vanderbilt team members had the ball and it slipped out of the guy's fingers out of bounds. So Vanderbilt could have won that game legitimately. It's just sad not to see Texas get put away by them. I think Texas still plays Georgia though. So I expect Texas will be a 3-loss team by the time we play them. Because I don't see Kirby losing.
Yeah, they played Georgia. They're on a bye this weekend, so they play Georgia next weekend.
I would say that nobody's had an easy time in the SEC just because it's the SEC. Mm-hmm. Missouri's looked pretty good this year, generally speaking, but then they got beat up, you know, and they lost to Vandy. Georgia lost to Alabama. Alabama lost to FSU to start the season, which was a terrible loss. Because FSU has proved out to be one of the worst teams in the ACC this year. And, you know, you have the other teams. Ole Miss took a loss. You know, Auburn's been terrible. So it's been so bad at the bottom end of the SEC that we have Arkansas fired their head coach in week 5 when they played Notre Dame. So that was the week after they played us. Week 6 or 7. Well, either way. they fired them after the Notre Dame game because Notre Dame destroyed Arkansas. So they fired Sam Pittman, replaced him with Bobby Petrino, who was their offensive coordinator. Then Florida fired their head coach, Bill
Napier.
Napier, after beating Mississippi State.
Right. After beating Mississippi State and Texas.
Yeah.
I get, you know, they haven't had a good year, but you beat Texas. Mm-hmm. And you're like, yeah, sorry. I mean, that is the one thing that saves an A&M coach.
Yeah.
You could be 1-11, and if that one is Texas, you're safe for another year.
Pretty much. Hilariously, when we fired Jimbo, it was after we beat Mississippi State. It was the same circumstance. And then we beat LSU. LSU fires Brian Kelly. Even before we touch them, South Carolina fires their offensive coordinator. So hilariously, LSU didn't fire just their head coach. They also fired their athletic director and the president of the college.
I didn't know about the president of the college. I knew about the AD, but the president of the college. What's more interesting about that is it wasn't just that, like, a decision for the university. The governor of Louisiana stepped in and said, we are going to help pick the next coach.
Yeah.
Or LSU. It's a little weird.
It is, but it's not unprecedented. This is actually par for the course for LSU.
Wow.
The governor will, on a lot of occasions, step in and just fire the entire staff because they all work, you know, it's a state school. So they all work effectively for the government, and he will crossfire all of them because LSU is doing badly.
Still a little bizarre.
You're not wrong, but par for the course for Louisiana and their football. So we've had three head coach fires. Interesting enough, the people who kicked off the head coach firing was Penn State. And they did that the week before Arkansas fired Sam Pittman. So there's a lot of head coaching jobs now open. A lot of people think Lane Kiffin might jump ship to one of the other programs that's now open, particularly, oh yeah, Auburn. Sorry, Auburn's fired their head coach this week. That was the most recent addition. He was Hugh Freeze, I want to say. Good riddance to him. He had a habit of blaming his players. So Auburn's open, Arkansas's open. LSU's open, and LSU's a pretty choice program. Nick Saban went there. He won a national championship with them before going on to Alabama. Les Miles won a national championship with them not that long ago. Coach O, on the coattails of Les Miles, won a national championship. It's a pretty well-funded program. The whole state's focused on football. You have an advantage in Louisiana for recruiting kids from Louisiana.
Because you're between the two biggest recruiting areas right now, which would be Texas, Alabama.
Yeah.
And I guess Georgia.
Well, Florida is always a large recruit area. So is Ohio. Mm-hmm. But Louisiana kids tend to go to LSU. It's just, just how things are. Partly a culture thing, and it's partly a Cajun mafia thing. Hey, you better go to LSU. or maybe we don't take care of your mama. kind of a thing. I mean, that stuff's real. Like, as much as we might not like it, it does. That kind of thing does happen. So you got kind of a lock there. I don't know who they're going to bring in from where, but I would expect some of the other highly ranked teams in the other conferences likely are going to be sending head coaches, whether they want to or not, into the SEC. It would not shock me if Coach Prime, you know, made a move from Colorado into an ACC school, or not an ACC, an SEC school. Or if one of the Big 12 or Big 10 teams or Big 12 teams that are doing well, you know, Texas Tech, who's having a phenomenal year in the Big 12. And then in the ACC took it on the chin this last week. They now have nobody in the top 12 of the rankings. They're both Miami and
Georgia Tech. Are they ACC?
Yeah. So Georgia Tech and Miami both lost games this last weekend, and so dropped out of the top 12.
And actually, they're not even the highest ranked ACC guys. Virginia and Louisville are higher at 14 and 15.
Now Virginia is the highest ranked ACC team.
And they actually got Virginia placed in that CFP thing I saw.
Right. Remember, the five conference champions, the five highest ranked conference champions, remember there's nine conferences, effectively, get into the college football playoffs, ranked or not. Right?
Right.
So that's projected to be right now, you know, the assumption is just the top ranked team. So that would be, you know, A&M, Ohio State, Tech, followed by Virginia, who's ranked number 14, and then Memphis, who's not even ranked because they're out of, like, what, the American Athletic Conference, if I remember correctly. So they're not even ranked, but they're going to make the playoffs because they're one of the five highest ranked conference championships. Because that rule was written back when there were five powered conferences, you know, when the Pac-12 existed. It wasn't just the Pac-2. That means that of all of the other teams that get in, you only have the top 10 because it's only 12 teams that get in. If two of the teams going to the playoffs out of the 12 are not even in the top 12, that knocks two people out. Yeah. You're going to have to be in the top 10 to get in. It's just this weird dynamic ongoing in the CFP. I think, you know, I don't see Ohio State or Indiana moving off the 1 and 2 spot. I think A&M's only chance to move up is if Ohio State loses to Michigan and we win out. And maybe if we beat Alabama in the conference championship, which I desperately want to do.
honestly, I mean, for if A&M wins out and gets to the conference championship, that alone should be a victory, though. Because when was the last time we were in a conference championship of any kind?
It was the Big 12, and it was before I was at college.
Right. So, I mean, that's a big victory right there. But, I mean, getting to any sort of playoff-esque game is a victory. So,
oh yeah, don't get me wrong. If we make it there. Mm-hmm. But then again, I'm always worried. It's going to be interesting rest of the season. We got four more games of the regular, and then hopefully another six games after that. Yep. No, it would only be five more. Conference championship and then four playoff games.
Well, for us, three, if we hold our spot.
Yeah, if we keep in the top four. Yep. So it would only be four more games. Either way, I'm hoping for it, but I'm not investing my feelings.
Come on, Debbie.
No, I will not invest my feelings. I am claimed by the battered Aggie syndrome. Lock, stock, and barrel. Hope was all making eyes.
That was great.
She just takes him by battered Aggie syndrome, grabs him by the arm, drags him away. If you don't know what we're talking about, SEC Shorts. Excellent YouTube.
Excellent.
Especially if you're a football fan.
They come out with a new video every Monday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Got it down to the minute practically at this point.
Yep. All right, folks, I think that's it for sports ball. We've run kind of long on this one.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is appropriate considering the gap in the last time we recorded sports ball.
But yeah, just remember we've got a website, patandthefatman.com. We are on Facebook, Pat and the Fat Man. We're on Twitter, @thefatman1238. We're on Instagram, @patandthefatman. Hit us up. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you want us to cover, what you are like, why are you covering this? We're also going to be starting our scouring for the next movie that we're going to cover. So
yes,
expect those polls to come out. I guess by the time this airs, those polls will already have been out and finished. But either way, I'll just say thank you for helping us choose our next movie, especially to our patrons who make the show possible. We've got several. Not just our moms, but other people who think that we are worth even just $1 a show. So if you think we might be worth something to you, make you laugh, consider supporting us, Patreon, Pat and the Fat Man. And I think that wraps it for this show. So I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
Gig 'em.
I've always called it FIFA. What does that stand for?
That's a good question.
Probably International Football Association. I don't know what the first F stands for. Full-blown, full-blooded, fistful of cash. Fistful of cash. Frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a damn.
Federation Internationale de Football Association.
So, federated cash money. I'm not going to talk about eating the rich too much on this podcast, although I wouldn't mind taking a couple bites.
What time did you get to bed on that one?
Yeah, I was up to about 2:30.